This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All right, let's go around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Actually, all right, sorry, Lopez. I know that we're trying to stay on track. We will go around the NFL here in a second, but y'all, wow, a lot of regrets very instantaneously. I will start with the subsection of sent that to the wrong person. Yep. Where someone let us know they were in meetings during like COVID where you're working virtually. They were in meetings. And after a little while, like after like a few weeks of meetings, they sent a message to their coworker saying, when is this bee going to stop? And apparently she responded back in the chat, whenever I want to, which yikes. In that same subset, somebody said they accidentally sent a mass email to their guy friends of naked women on a boat, and it went to the priest of their Catholic church.
Yeah, oh, man. Yeah,
you might imagine the talking to came to after that one. And then the secondary subsection is times you bucked up to not your dad, but your mom as well. As I think that's happening right now in the chat on the YouTube page. Again, appreciation to the MoCaram injury lawyers. Our guy Phoenix Marcus said he bucked up to his mama, found out quick that she was a Power Ranger, still have the scar on his lip from that. And shout out to Kix Rocks, who said, same except wooden spoon. So, yeah, man, there's a lot of those. We had the whole break we were talking about similar situations, mm-hmm. including one with a good friend of mine that had to do with mac and cheese and him not the one to eat it. When I tell you he slept good after that particular whooping, he did sleep very good.
My people will know about the chancla, the dreaded chancla.
That's right.
That's my right. Mom, she could pull it like a six shooter.
Like a holster, just out the holster?
Yeah, like a six shooter, man.
Spaghetti
shoes,
Western stuff.
What you know about them shoes?
The chancla, the little slipper.
There you go.
She could just pop it out and whip you.
And they used to throw it like a boomerang. Like, boom!
And we laugh to keep from crying.
Yes, we laugh
to keep from crying. All right, let's go around the NFL here where the NFL draft was widely well-regarded, well-watched, as I think John Lewis of Sports Media Watch said that the second night of the draft attracted an average audience of 7.3 million viewers across all platforms, a 40% increase from day two of last year.
I wonder why.
Yep. That is a question.
What was they waiting on to get drafted?
Yeah.
Although one thing I will say, right, there was a ton of people at just physically at this draft. Green Bay really had people show up in a big, I mean, because I was watching day two, day three, and I was like, they still got a good amount of people out there even still. But yes, Figgy, you are absolutely right that a lot of this was driven by the, I guess, fall, if we want to call it that, of Shedeur Sanders down the draft boards, ultimately landing in the fifth round with Cleveland, a team that he was, you know, kind of mocked to very early on in the process at two overall. He ultimately tumbles to that place. And there's been a lot of conversation. What is it? Hashtag discourse about this in particular.
A lot of think pieces.
Where do you fall on this? Are you Lopez, in the place where you go, this is simply the market dictating that he is not as hefty of a prospect. Is this some level of indictment of him as in his professionalism or what have you? Or is this something else entirely?
Sometimes, you know, we say this saying, two things can be true at once.
Sure.
I think three things can be true at once.
Okay.
In his case. Number one, I refuse to believe that this was any kind of conspiracy, any kind of NFL, you know, owners and general managers and coaches, you know, sort of not sort of getting the pack mentality, because some team would have taken him earlier. Like even with the pack mentality, with the, you know, the reputation and all this other stuff, there would have been a team that could have taken him earlier. So I refuse to believe this is some sort of like conspiracy type thing. The second thing is obviously the funny thing. You know, I guess the Cleveland Browns have some quarterbacks now, huh? They have some selection.
Because they in the third round they took Dillon Gabriel, and that's where I fall that on this, or that's part of where I fall that. I think, and I will start by prefacing this with, you can attest this, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not just coming up with this on the back end to try and both sides or what have you. I was not high on Deion or on Shedeur Sanders as a quarterback prospect, which to be fair, I'm not high on any of the quarterbacks in this particular draft. And if you get to a certain point, like I did not see the reason why he would be a number two or number three overall outside of simply quarterback is an important position and people will get there. We had a whole long text conversation about such.
Yeah.
With that being said, right? I can even see the ways in which Jaxson Dart over Shedeur Sanders is a way that you could go, right? Jaxson Dart is a very, very raw player, but there's some there's some upside. In fact, to speak to how raw he is, because I think this is funny. Can you give me this from John Gruden and his quarterback situation? You do have this, right, Figgy? This is Jaxson Dart explaining to John Gruden what his snap count sounds like.
Stand up. Let me see your snap count. Let me be honest with me, because I see at USC, I see this guy. Go ahead.
You ready?
Yeah. No, I want to hear the snap count.
Yeah.
Really? Every time?
Every time.
Do you have like a dummy clap or anything?
Yeah, we call it purple.
What's that?
Yeah.
For 3 years, you've been clapping. I think I could do that.
Let me hear it.
No, I ain't doing it.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah, Jaxson Dart, when he gets to the NFL and he's having to do all these extra calls, there might be some more to be done there. I found it to be hilarious.
It was.
Because he had the biggest smile on his face, Jaxson Dart did. He's like, look at this. Watch this. Watch this. You ready? You ready to see it? You ready?
He planned it.
Clap.
Yeah.
Like, that was it.
Yeah, they always ask that, so he does. So.
It was hilarious. Yeah. But, I mean, I can even see going Jaxson Dart over him. Like, I could see the going on the upside play for Jaxson Dart, and he will have that opportunity in New York. The thing is, you start getting me to the point of relative value when you talk about opportunity cost. Mm-hmm. Tyler Shuck is going to be 26 years old at the start of the season.
That's where I kind of lost. I'm like, all right, man.
That I don't see the ceiling proposition on him. Dillon Gabriel, his ceiling is expected to be, or actually, I don't see the floor on him. Like, he has an incredibly low floor, Tyler Shuck. Dillon Gabriel, reasonable minds, because obviously, when we talk about projection, we are guessing to some extent. So I'm keeping this kind of rough because I don't know that I want to say absolutely, but reasonable minds assessing his possible ceiling is good backup.
Yeah.
And he was taken two rounds ahead of Shedeur Sanders.
In the third round.
Yeah.
Two rounds ahead of Shedeur Sanders.
I didn't get that one,
man. So, you can talk to me about maybe what he is as a prospect and maybe him not being a first-round prospect. Even in this year, I can maybe go with you on that argument. I can even maybe go with you on the idea that Shedeur Sanders, his ceiling might be a little bit lower than some of the other guys that are in this. I can hear you on that argument. I don't know how much I'd agree with it, but I can hear you on the argument. When we start getting to these places, I don't know that you go to a place where you talk about a level of his personality or arrogance that is so much more than the opportunity cost of a quarterback, especially if you're talking about a dude who has the possibility of being a solid starter compared to a dude whose ceiling is backup quarterback. You mean to tell me that his interviews were so poor that no team goes, the opportunity cost is just so great that I'm not taking it? I'm having a hard time buying it.
I get that, but I think the answer is yes. There's not the NFL didn't all 32 conspire to we're going to show him it was that bad. They didn't all fall in line with some narrative. These guys, they think independently. They do their own thing, and they always go back to, well, I can fix him. The coaches, I can fix him. We talked about that a lot. So Dillon Gabriel was absolutely a head scratcher. Tyler Shook, absolutely a head scratcher. But here's the third thing that I got to. The three things can be true at once.
Okay.
All right? The third thing is, and this was going to be a confession, but I'll say it right here because I got other confessions. As comical as it all seems, I think they actually got a steal with Shedeur Sanders in the fifth round.
100%.
In the fifth round, I think they finally, to your point, they finally said, well, screw it. It's not going to cost us much here. And everything that happens, if it doesn't work out, nobody's going to be pointing and laughing at the Browns. There's plenty to laugh at already with the Browns, But if it's just a good, solid quarterback that can start some games. Because keep in mind, Flacco's old. Pickett isn't going to do anything. Dylan Gabriel, you talked about. Maybe they see him as a backup. But if they strike gold.
He actually have a chance to start.
If they strike gold all of a sudden and he's just a good quarterback, that's a steal.
Assuming that they have the incentive to, because yeah. I think, and I'm sure Ron will make this point, but one of the points that he was making when we were talking about this is also that he now, like, he has less of a guarantee, or guarantee is not even the right way of saying it, but like he has a lower ground to stand on being a fifth round pick, because teams are incentivized, as much as we want to talk about the best player ultimately getting to that place. My high school coaches used to say this, and it upset the hell out of me because we know politics factors in, but the idea that the cream will rise to the top.
Yeah.
We also know that, like, your draft position, your contractual, you know, mm-hmm. the obligations that they have to you contractually do impact it. And it's a lot different when you're talking about a third round, second round pick compared to a fifth round pick, where he's got a real uphill battle in order just to make the roster, considering that you got technically five quarterbacks, although I don't know that where Deshaun Watson will fall mm-hmm. on the active roster, what have you, right? You've got a lot of quarterbacks in there that you have to find your way above. So he's going to have to ball out very quickly to justify his existence on that roster.
But he's got 2 years. He won't, a fifth round pick won't get cut the first year.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, generally, no. Sixth and seventh, maybe.
If you're the third quarterback, right? Yeah. But there's a lot of quarterbacks is what I'm saying. And mm-hmm. there is a situation where you could get them to, they could easily get to a place where they go, sorry, dog, you're quarterback four.
If I had to bet on it, I would probably bet this ain't looking good for Kenny Pickett, somebody like Kenny mm-hmm. Pickett.
Or Deshaun, of course.
Well, he just kind of has to be. They don't have the out.
He's probably going to be on the PUP list or something like that. But.
So, no, I think, to me, if you want to point and laugh at the Browns, you can, and there's plenty to you can point and laugh at.
Well, you can point and laugh at this draft they had.
Yes,
absolutely. Can I give you a point and laugh in some ways? Did you see Kevin Stefanski and the general manager when they were making the selection, or once the selection mm-hmm. was in and was being announced? Them boys was clapping, but they did not look excited. Like, they really didn't look that excited. 713, he just isn't that good. That is all relative. Mm-hmm. I just gave you a relative reason where he's absolutely that good comparatively to the third round pick that the Browns selected themselves. Mm-hmm. And a dude who probably went in the second round pick, who I would easily say is not as good as Deion or Shador. I keep wanting to call him Deion. Mm-hmm. Shador Sanders. And so, anyways, look, we've said our piece. And ultimately, this is one of those kind of topics mm-hmm. that is so robust that I think that a lot of people are going to have fairly solid stances on this, and ultimately it's up to him. Like, is he going to get out here and, you know, be able to do the things that are necessary for him to be a success in a way that I think he obviously wants to, and I imagine the Browns would want him to, just for their own personal benefit.
Yeah.
So with that being the case, you had the Shador drop, but within that, a subplot was, there was somebody out here calling to prank him during the course of this.
That was that's just cruel. And the fact that it was a guy who knew better. He knew better.
Yeah. So Jax Ulbrich, who was the son of the Falcons defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich, released a statement apologizing for prank calling Shador Sanders to try and basically, you know, make it seem like mm-hmm. he was being drafted. On Instagram, saying that he made a tremendous mistake. He was, you know, he spoke to specifically to Shador Sanders, and he appreciated Shador accepting his call, saying that he was selfish, childish, and, you know, obviously spoke to it. Mm-hmm. It was, I guess, nice that he did ultimately apologize, but that is really problematic that information was so easily accessible mm-hmm. From players. And I know that, you know, there's just going to be a defense coordinator is going to have these information available to them. That was a little bit troubling that, like, that was so easily accessible.
Well, and the other thing, you know, a lot of people are blaming, you know, his father for leaving. I guess he left his iPad open, unlocked. But if you can't do that in your own home with, you know, a high school age person there who knows exactly what the situation is, I actually don't even blame him that much. You know, it was the kid. It was the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just something stupid. That's like mm-hmm. stealing out of your mom's purse.
Right.
Yeah,
you know.
Just, yeah. You know not to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he wasn't the only one, Shador.
There were several, right?
Tyler Warren was mm-hmm. also prank called. He ultimately went 14th to the Colts. So mm-hmm. you'll be seeing him in division. Obviously, we know that. But supposedly when the Jets were up at 7, mm-hmm. he received a prank call as well. I don't know that we have very many details as to who. The NFL is currently looking into this, as this is becoming a mini epidemic of sorts in the NFL, because there was also somebody else who was prank called in this. And I just don't get what you're getting
out
of it.
What do you get out of it? What do you get out of something
just
like that?
Just being stupid.
I mean, it's not even funny. It's not funny by any stretch.
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all. So the NFL is actively looking into it, which I did find a little bit humorous in maybe a dark way, because there's a lot of things that the NFL allows mm-hmm. other people to look into.
Yeah.
They're like, we got to jump into action. We can't have these people prank calling players.
Yeah.
We can't do this. So, yeah, no, but the NFL is looking into it. When it comes down to it, what school do you believe had the most players selected throughout the NFL draft?
Well, I think we all know this one. Figgy?
Do you?
The Ohio State University.
That's correct. 14 selections to Ohio State. Do you know who was second?
Georgia?
The University of Georgia, okay. At 13. Mm-hmm. So, but the SEC as a conference had the most with mm-hmm. 79. Big Ten had the second most with 71. The drop-off pretty steep to the ACC, 42 selections from the ACC. Miami leading the charge there with 7. And then the Big 12 had 31 selections as well. Colorado having 4, Iowa State, Arizona, Oklahoma State having
3 receivers, too, Colorado.
Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. yes, the most wide receivers that were taken in a very particular place. So, mm-hmm. yeah, man.
They made Shadur look good.
Maybe so. That is a part of Shadur's game that does, like, he had, a 70-something completion percentage, mm-hmm. but I think the tracking data would tell you that his receivers did still have to make some movements mm-hmm. when it came to, like, open passes. Yeah. So, I'll be the last one to tell you, mm-hmm. no, he's a perfect prospect that should have gone number 2. I'm not telling you that.
Right.
But I just find it hard to believe that you go that far with that many quarterbacks in between.
Mel Kiper would tell you.
I bet he would.
Dude, that got too much.
He went on and on.
That was too
man.
Much.
He was crashing out, man. That was a classic case of crashing out, man.
Just take the L on that one.
Can I give you a story that I don't know how to qualify or describe, because in some ways you could call it a bittersweet, like kind of a maybe heartwarming, but mm-hmm. also a very sad story. Derek Harmon, interior defensive lineman, who was selected by the Steelers in the first round with a 21 in that spot on Thursday. His mother, Tiffany Sane, she suffered a stroke in 2022 that left her paralyzed on her left side. Mm-hmm. So she was on life support in the hospital as he's going through, you know, his college career and everything. And she passed away on Thursday night,
mm-hmm.
about 15 minutes after he was able to, like, kind of get to the hospital and talk with her about him basically reaching this fulfillment of a mm-hmm. life's dream. And so it was such a wild story to think about, that you had this, I mean, your mother is in this tough circumstance. Yeah. You have this moment of jubilation. And it almost feels like you can craft the narrative of she held on just long enough to see her baby, make sure that he's solidified for a good amount of his lifetime.
To me, this was comforting. A lot of people saying sad, and it is, obviously, but to me, this was comfort. She could have died last week. She could have died last year. She could have died next week, but she died then. To me, that's almost a comforting thing.
I would hope so. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, if you were inclined to try and talk about, or if you're living through this, I imagine you would want to take the most optimistic and hopeful and, I guess, encouraging aspect or look at it.
Mm-hmm.
With all of that, obviously, condolences to Derek Harmon. And obviously, I imagine that there has to be some level of warmth in the idea that she was able to at least see her son reach that height. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's stay with the draft. You know what comes after the draft? Draft grades. What are the experts, quote unquote, saying about the draft of the Texans? And why not go around the AFC South and see what other draft grades they're getting? We'll do that next. All right, letter grades, ladies and gentlemen. Letter grades. 713-572-4610. The Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line is what that is. What's your letter grade for the Texans? That's what comes after the NFL draft. We give grades based off of what? Who knows? Do we know anything?
Our knowledge.
But we do this. It's an obligation, actually. I'm pretty sure it was in my contract.
Yeah.
When you talk on the radio, we got to do draft grades. I just, it's above me.
I saw a draft grade. I think it was like a graphic sheet at all the teams.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had A's and B's. I'm like, are y'all serious?
Because you don't know.
Every team?
How can it be an F?
Every team. I'm like, damn, y'all pretty nice. I wish y'all was my teacher.
I want that teacher.
Man. A's and B's, everybody.
That's right.
All 32.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, man, let's look at some what these, I guess, experts are giving the Texans and, I guess, some of the other teams in the AFC South, because obviously that's who you're contending with on a more, on a smaller basis mm-hmm. Or more intimate level. Let's start with ESPN, because Mel Kiper Jr.,
Well, I know what he gave the Browns.
Went not, yeah, he did give the Browns an A plus. That is a thing that
I didn't even see it, and I knew that.
He said that they had their team needs with quarterback, wide receiver, edge rusher, running back.
A plus.
All that. He talked about the shocker trading.
Is there
back
anything higher
that.
Than A plus?
Draft two quarterbacks, two running backs, and defensive tech. A plus, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
They hit the needs. Which is interesting because with the Texans not going like as heavily need, you know, drafting as I guess some might have expected, and I say some, including myself, not to, you know, push myself out, I was interested to see what people said. And for Mel Kiper Jr., he gave them a B plus, talking about the top needs being wide receiver, tackle, and guard, which they addressed two of those three in their first three picks. Now, mind you, of course, that started in the second round. But, you know, he talks about all of the movement and shaking when it comes to wide receivers, when you talk about injuries and Stephon Diggs moving on and then offensive line. So he points to the fact that you got Jaden Higgins, 6'4", explosive on the outside. Jalen Noel, speed after the catch burst. And then obviously Ariante Ursary, known as Tay, 6'6", 331, big boy.
Thank goodness he's known as Tay.
Why? Because you can't say Ariante ain't that hard.
I don't want to be saying Ariante.
Ariante?
Ariante is easy.
Tay Ursary.
Okay. All right.
By the way, before we move on, since we're playing this game, what would you guys, and I'll give mine as well, what would you give the Texans as a grade? We haven't even done that, and we're in the business of doing that. What grade would you give the Texans?
I also will give it a B plus. I think it was good. I think I love what you did wide receiver wise. Like, I know that there's a lot of people clamoring for weapons. I see you what's happening to Larry Stafford, along with everybody else. And I think that you did that to a good degree. I do think that then what was left out was not applying more talented competition to this offensive line. And you're really depending on guys who maybe on the backside of their careers and maybe sliding to hold on and put together a good offensive line with Nick Cayley and Cole Popovich's instruction. And I can't be certain of that going in. I guess my certainty doesn't matter. Ultimately is what they put on the field and how they are able to do it. But I don't feel great about that even still after the draft. And so that is the difference between B plus and getting some level of A plus, something in there.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Reggie on this. I'm gonna give him a B plus. I think I don't want to say drop the ball in the first round. I think they did what was smart, was their person wasn't there.
Yeah.
They couldn't trade up, and so they traded out and got more picks. But I do think they addressed the wide receiver position a lot more than we all would have thought. I didn't think they was gonna take two receivers like that. And I don't know how to feel about Ariante. It looked like I was listening to John Harris. I think day three when they drafted him, and he was.
Ariante was day two because he was in the second round, but
or day two. Yeah, I think he. I was listening day three. He was talking about.
Gotcha.
Him and Sean Pendergast was breaking down the picks, and he mentioned how he think he could probably play inside too.
Yeah.
So I think that bumps it up to a B plus for me because you got that guy who could probably start off in the inside and maybe work it. Maybe that is the future left tackle. I don't know, but.
Is John Harris still in his afterglow mode for Woody Marks?
My boy was post-coital. My boy was post-coital. I don't know that he has ever been that happy in his life.
Man.
My bad. You know what? I'll put my hand up. Mea culpa. I will get you the audio of John Harris.
Oh, my goodness.
enjoying himself with finding out.
He really enjoyed himself.
Jaquavius Woody Marks was going to be a Houston Texan.
Dude needed a cigarette and a sandwich.
We'll get there. We will absolutely get there.
Just for the record, I will give him a B-plus as well. And, you know, my gut was true to me in this draft. My gut kept saying, they're going to go wide receiver. They got to go wide receiver. They went wide receiver twice. And so I like that. And what did I kept saying to you guys via text and otherwise? Am I going to get my running back? They got their running back, so I'm there with you. But what else on the AFC South?
All right. I actually wanted to give you another one just to kind of be able to juxtapose. This is from The Athletic. And this is, I mean, Dane Brugler, a guy who you know that I'm very fond of, maybe a little less so now, finding out that with this draft, he has the Texans ranked 24th when it comes to the draft class. Mm-hmm. Now, I appreciate the 713 on the text line saying draft grades are pointless, man. Agreed. We're doing it. Just
we got to do something right
but
now.
On the backside of it, they also gave their draft objective grade at a B+. So I thank you for participating, even if you do so under protest. But he mentioned his favorite pick being Jalen Knoll, right? You know, where they did a good job. The Texans did a job addressing potentially left tackle, bolstering the receiver depth chart, things that we talked about that were very evident. He said that the day three pick who could surprise is Jalen Reed, the safety.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously playing very aggressive. Sometimes he can be a little over-aggressive and miss, but, you know, ultimately you still have the physical tackles and then also ball production. And so getting him on a day three instead of in day two, he really liked him. But ultimately I was like 24th. But I think that that speaks to, again, for me, this team was not necessarily drafting. Well, not necessarily. I don't think they were drafting to fill starter or really like large role player holes, right? I think outside of your top three,
maybe
picks
Higgins,
that,
yeah,
Higgins, Knoll, maybe. Yeah. Like, I think you, I got two guys, like two starter spots, possibly three guys that I think could possibly be starters on this team this season, and very much everything else was just get some guys that can get in here and compete and maybe add in, do some special team stuff, and, you know, help make your team
younger. Who's
your
third one?
And so it's Higgins, Knoll, Tay, Ariante, Ursary.
Okay. Okay.
Outside of that, I don't see any. Do you see another guy who, like, could be a starter this season?
Well, not a starter, but I could see big reps with Woody Marks. I'm not John Harris, but I was. I'm a fan of that pick very much. Splitting it with Joe Mixon, you know, something along those lines. And then the other one that is very intriguing to me. You talked about Jalen Reed, a steal. You know, they said it was kind of a steal at number 187. Luke Lachey, their final pick, number 255.
Yeah.
That dude is a blocker. He's not going to catch a lot of passes. May not catch three all season. But if he could.
Damn, three? The over-under is 2.5?
I'm exaggerating a little bit. But he is not here to catch passes. He is here to block. His dad was a hell of a tackle in the NFL.
His dad not Nick Lachey?
No, not Nick Lachey. Okay. It was the other Lachey. Intrigue. Intrigue is what I'm saying.
Yeah, man. Underneath target, smooth, but he is there to block, which that makes sense, especially if you wanted a guy who could add in on the blocking game. You either kind of had to get one of those guys at the very top, and, you know, that's somewhat. And then the blocking tight ends were around that space where you got one, which was cool. But you want to talk a little bit about some of these other teams in the AFC South?
Yeah, man.
Right. And I will continue to kind of utilize Dane Brugler here and see how you feel about that. The Tennessee Titans in your division. They had the eighth best class, according to Dane Brugler, offensively. Obviously getting Cam Ward, but adding an edge rusher in Oluwafemi Oladejo, and then adding a safety in the third round as well. And then they had three fourth-round picks, including adding one of my favorite players to watch when I actually watched Stanford, in Elik Ayamanor, who feels like he has a high ceiling with just being a talented guy, but it's very raw. And then also they got Gunnar Helm as well. So, like, they've got some interesting players that I think could be really important. They hit on a lot of areas in need. And so how did you feel about the Titans and their draft? Obviously they get the quarterback in Cam Ward, but they added some things around the edges that really could at least bring the floor of their roster up.
And the sheer number impressed me. Six players in the first four rounds. The numbers alone give them some flexibility. The team that I've said it, just kind of starting to worry me a little bit. I keep saying, don't worry about the Jags. Don't worry about the Jags. I thought the Jags had a real good draft.
Yeah.
I really do.
Travis Hunter at the top.
Yeah.
I'm just so interested to see how they ultimately decide to utilize him. But outside of that, they add a cornerback, which they definitely needed to some degree. They let go of Ronald Darby, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wyatt Milam, a guard out of West Virginia. And then they add, like, Bashel Tuna running back in the fourth round, so he will kind of filter into what has been a pretty solid running back core. We talk about, like, Tank Bigsby being in there and ETN. They typically keep a couple of them that can do a little bit of something. And then they add some linebackers and some defensive players as you go down further in the draft. So, like, it really is just like the top end. Having to see Travis Hunter, but will they be able to, like, actually get him the football and have him work with the, you know, kind of wild role that they're going to have to try and work, you know, I guess, facilitate.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be an interesting one, but I'm not worried necessarily as much because of where he stands comparatively to the incredible defensive secondary that you put together. And the Colts came in at 27 on this. So not a super highly regarded draft, but still, they did a good thing at the very top where you go, Tyler Warren.
Yeah, that's that's the only thing there.
They add the Ohio State edge, JT Tuimoloau. And so they add those guys. I think that's really the interesting part of it. Outside of that, I don't know that there's much that really shakes me or moves me. But the division, I don't know. I think that there's definitely some floor raising, but I don't know. And maybe it wasn't the draft. This is a meat and potatoes draft. I don't know if this is the draft that was going to raise the fortunes of all these teams in such a way where I think that they become some level of danger to. But yeah, there you go. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's talk about what's popping here, including, did y'all see that CBS interview of Bill Belichick? We'll talk about that and the possibility that we're getting closer to seeing Lance McCullers. We'll talk about it next. All right, let's get into what's popping here in loop on Sports Radio 610. Obviously, one of the biggest things of the weekend was the NFL draft. And I guess an undercurrent within it, I understand y'all probably sick of us mentioning the Cleveland Browns. However, it is worth noting. Shout out to Texans Cap for this as well. Finally, we have reached the point where we can say that all trade assets stemming from the Deshaun Watson trade have been utilized.
I didn't even pick up on that.
It's fully done.
Yeah.
It's fully done. 19 players.
How'd they end up on that?
19 players. I have a feeling that they lost. I mean, the owner of the team admitted earlier this year, was it early this year or late last year, that, yeah, no, it was the swing and a miss.
I think it was at the owner's
meeting. Was at the owner's meeting. Swing and a miss. Like, it was very much a swing and a miss. Mm-hmm. But yes, 19 players, 18 drafted players and one veteran throughout all of that.
Plus I got to say,
whole bag of money.
Yeah, you got to give Nick Caserio a lot of credit for this too, man.
Should we round of applause real quick?
100%.
Round of applause real quick.
Because remember, like, even though it was a haul, it was three first round picks and four, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But he could have just stayed put and drafted three first rounders. He was flipping and dealing and all type of stuff, man. Mm-hmm. How you get 18 players out of this, man? Crazy.
Very, I don't know.
You got to give him credit for that one, man.
Very, very carefully. So, yeah, salute to Nick Caserio, as Figgy Fig said. The Astros finished out a three-game set on the road at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City. They finished with a win at the very least. They lose the series after not putting any runs up on Friday nor Saturday. A little lackluster of a game from Hayden Wesneski on Friday. I know he went six, but he did not – or was it five, actually? But it just didn't go very well. I think he only had a singular strikeout in that instance. So that was a little tough. Yes, five innings, eight hits, two earned runs allowed, and only one strikeout. So, I mean, he has been a little bit better than that, or not a little bit, but he's definitely been better than that of late. Did not necessarily have a good one. Seth Lugo, though, was indeed dealing, going eight innings.
I didn't expect that, to be honest.
No. Yeah. I mean, they've been pitching decently, at least Lugo did. And then, of course, another 2-0 loss on Saturday. But you got some offense. You got some offense yesterday, last night. Was there anything of the weekend that, I mean, there's still not a lot of power coming from this team, but it feels like at least the offense is somewhat normalizing, including Yordan going yard?
Well, the thing from the weekend is this just what they're going to be? Just hard to predict? You get shut out back-to-back games. That's an issue no matter what point of the season you're in. You got to get some runs in. I think Michael Wacha didn't have a win going into the game. He was 0-3, but he was okay at like a 4 ERA. And then all of a sudden, pitches like that and gets you out. That's not necessarily just him. That's your offense.
Yeah.
You know?
No, for sure. But it seems like they can at least cobble something together sometimes. But you're right. Like that is not super sustainable, unfortunately, but at the very least, you're not going to start this year like you have some of the years past, because you're 14-13. Like, it's impossible for you to go 12 and what have you in the month of April. So this Astros team has looked a little bit better, but there's still room to find a little bit more of their I guess, stride.
They don't have an identity right now.
Are you sure? Certain on this?
Pitching. Pitching is their identity, especially with starting with Hunter Brown. But I'm talking about more like what to expect from them
on any given
night, because you get shut out back to back. Your offense still, as you mentioned, struggling. Thank goodness for Hunter Brown.
Sincerely.
Thank you, Hunter Brown, because with him on the mound, at least you're going to be able to to end any prolonged, you know, bad stretches and such. But offensively, I don't know. I don't know what to expect from these guys every day.
I don't either. Yeah. One of the questions I was asking myself is the way that these guys approach at the plate, like, is that, I know that, and I'm digging into the conspiracy territory where people start talking about coaching, right? And I always want to be very careful about this. But is it possible that, you know, they're just the scouting reports aren't necessarily what you would want them to be? Because there's way too often where you're seeing really meaty pitches not being swung on by some of these guys. Or is some of that just like the continued desire to have better at-bats, longer at-bats?
Longer at-bats. I think that's it. You know, they've had the marching orders from spring training to be more selective at the plate. Maybe too selective, you know, something along those lines.
I feel like when we talk of selective, that don't mean the ones down the middle, friend.
Exactly.
The ones down the middle, swing at that one, friend. Don't keep the bat on your shoulder. Mm-hmm. So there you go. You have that. And now the Astros come back home to welcome in another team that's on a four-game run, just like Kansas City was coming in to this weekend series. It's the A's. It is the
Tigers.
The nomadic. Is it? It's the Tigers. Yeah. Yes, it is the Tigers. Apologies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is the Tigers. That are coming into this series in Daikin Park on a four-game win streak. Mm-hmm. So really hoping to welcome in A.J. Hinch, but also send him out with some losses on his ledger, some wins for the Astros, who, mind you, are one of six AL teams who have a positive run differential, which is nice at the very least. They're a game and a half out of first. And maybe, just maybe, you're getting closer and closer to the being able to employ the services once again of this man who just reached 10 years of service time, Lance McCullers Jr., who over the weekend, 5 innings of work, 3 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. Like, that just feels as professional, as clinical as you want. I believe that there was a little bit of a kind of intimating that he might have one more rehab start in his in his near future, and then you could see, possibly, hopefully, fingers crossed, Lance McCullers Jr. back with the Astros.
And you know, as far as your team strength, obviously gets bolstered there. Now, Forrest Whitley is on the 15-day because of nothing arm-related necessarily, but so he took a step back. But McCullers, that's going to be a huge, huge add when you get him.
So, yeah, Astros in action tonight. They'll get going against the Tigers. And then, just real quick, wanted to mention the Houston Roughnecks 27-3 win over the Brahmas, so finding some more W's as they go along. I would like to take you to CBS, where Bill Belichick did an interview with CBS. And the question I have still to this point is, why exactly was this agreed to? Because there's a few things in this that were really odd within this. One of them, I kind of understand why it's odd. It seemed like it's been a, kind of a point of contention for him in general, and that's this. Bill Belichick was asked about his firing, at least Robert Kraft viewed as a firing. This is what he had to say in this portion of the interview that he did.
Do you feel like you were treated with dignity and respect when you were let go by Robert Kraft?
Yeah, well, it was a mutual decision for us to part ways.
He said fired.
It was a mutual decision.
So that's the first awkward part.
That's the ornery Bill Belichick I know. But that seems to make sense. It has seemed like historically that those guys, even though they seem to make a fairly, like a really good kind of partnership of sorts, and especially when you talk about Robert Kraft as owner, allowed Bill Belichick to do his thing for the most part, which is, I think, the right way to go about ownership. They seem to not like each other, and that seems to kind of show up here. Or am I stretching
no,
too far?
No, gosh, no, you're not stretching at all. There is no such thing as a mutual parting of the ways. Someone has to initiate it, inevitably. You don't simultaneously say...
Just blurt it out at the same time?
Yeah, hey, what do you think of... No, someone initiated this. Clearly that someone was Robert Kraft. There's no such thing as a mutual parting of the ways.
Yeah. Yeah, because also, yeah. I don't know why Bill Belichick himself would want out of that circumstance.
Sure.
I understand he needed to build a team. And honestly, I personally started having questions about his ability to zig where others zagged, because I thought that was his superpower, right? It was being able to notice and see market inefficiencies and take advantage of them with his coaching style. It seemed like they were doing less and less of that. And then his natural proclivity to not necessarily draft or, you know, make the most of draft picks, or I guess if he's not necessarily zigging or zagging, I thought that would be that was being an issue. But yeah, I guess there's that. And then more importantly, I think, or maybe less importantly in a way, was obviously the conversation around Bill Belichick is his girlfriend, his very, very young girlfriend, Jordan Hudson, who is in some ways like a person of import there at the University of North Carolina, you know, emails and all sorts of things. She seemed to be around this interview, except not wanting to be fully a part of it. This is how that sounded.
The other change for Belichick is 24-year-old Jordan Hudson, his creative muse, as he writes in his book.
Make sure that that's the philosophy.
Jordan was a constant presence during our interview.
You have Jordan right over there. Everybody in the world seems to be following this relationship. They've got an opinion about your private life. It's got nothing to do with them, but they're invested in it. How do you deal with that?
Never been too worried about what everybody else thinks. Just try to do what I feel like is best for me and what's right.
How did you guys meet?
Not talking about this.
No?
No.
It's a topic neither one of them is comfortable commenting on, though Hudson has recently posted about it on Instagram.
She said how they met.
That's
on the airplane, reading a book, and he was interested. Remember that?
That wasn't how they met, clearly.
Well,
that
is more suspicious, though.
Yeah, no, this is a red flag right here.
Well, it is a red flag.
Because,
you're right.
Because she stepped in because she probably thought she was going to spill out how they really met.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, why, you know, I get Bill Belichick is going to be somewhat controversial just because he's so close, you know, vested, so to speak. How is this a problem?
I don't understand. Like
was it an issue how you met?
This was very much something that made me go, why exactly are we doing this interview? And could we not have anticipated that this would be a part of it, especially as so much of your persona recently has been with this woman who, understandably, like if this is your, I guess this might be a little heavy, but whatever. If this is your life partner that you're operating with, I get it. That matters. She matters greatly to your life.
Yeah.
She's been involved in your work stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We get out here talking about whether it's your work stuff or your life stuff. That's going to come up.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? Not even just like the story itself. The idea that she's brought up and she goes, we're not going to talk about this. Mm-hmm. What you mean we're not going to talk? You were right here adding into the conversation.
No,
like,
here's the thing. She told him. She tells him everything. Look, of all the people that could have, you know, wielded power over Bill Belichick. It wasn't Robert Kraft. It wasn't Tom Brady. It was Jordan Hudson.
I mean, that's how it works sometimes, though.
It's undefeated. It's undefeated.
Hey, the person who might be able to tell me something is that person. Anyways, that was an interview on CBS. I guess you could go and check out more if you are so inclined. What a weird dude.
Wild.
Man. What a weird dude. I'm so interested to see just how this works. Because also, there's just the general UNC and the way they're handling this.
She's running the show there.
I mean, but he's also trying to run it like an NFL program. And I'm not sure you can actually do that. So I will be watching that closely. But that's just some of what happened this weekend. Oh, yeah, that's right. If I want to talk about what's popping tonight at 9 p.m. Central Time.
You sure?
9 p.m. I'm certain of it this time. TNT and Space City Home Network. Sorry, I can't read that text. We will get Rockets Warriors game 4. The Rockets really hoping to level this thing out. I haven't seen updates on Jimmy Butler myself personally. I don't know. We might have to double check and see if there's anything more. But yeah, he did not play in game 3, and that didn't matter because the Rockets still lost 103-94. They'll hope to level it back up. Hopefully, you get Jalen Green on the upside of the roller coaster and level it up, bringing yourself back Houston. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, it feels like the message that this team sent about the offensive line through the draft is very clear. Is that the right one, though? 713-572-4610. Let's discuss it next.
All right, let's talk about Underdog, man. Playoffs are here. You know that. We just talked about it, and it's a good time to get in with Underdog Fantasy. They are one of the best places to make picks during the basketball playoffs. That extender program still going on with the extender. You can play your way to increasingly bigger boosts each round of the playoffs. I've been addicted to this. In fact, tonight, got a few things going on. A little Steph Curry, a little Jalen Green, Kawhi Leonard. Here's how it works. All you have to do is download the app. Highly recommend that. Choose whether a player is going to go higher or lower on one of their stats. And everything from points, assists, and a lot more. You can even take players from different teams, different games, etc. And download the Underdog app, and you have to remember this. OG610, that is my promo code. Good things happen. That's OG610.